Hello, everyone, and welcome to Attack of Opportunity Live. We made it barely on a Monday night. I changed careers. You know, this live show that I've set up, my tank. Now, we're trying to hold the Monday slot for Up and Coming Starfinder game, switching off, of course, with our homebrew Pathfinder 2nd Edition game, The World of Rotram. Both are not DM'd by me. I get to be a player. I know you've seen enough of me in the chair, but today we are doing our Tank of Opportunity show live, and we have someone special in the hot seat. Lately, I've gone after geeks and nerds that are not in the podcast genre. Sure, they know about it, they do it stuff, but they have, shall we say, a different ilk, a different type of content creator. And it is my distinct pleasure to introduce you to the author of the Geek Native blog, Mr. Andrew Girtwood. Andrew, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah.
So the first question that we always like to ask all of our victims here on Attack of Opportunity is, how did you first know, possibly back in the day, that you were a geek, a nerd, one of us, one of us?
Good question. I invented my own role-playing game. And you can imagine how mixed feelings it was to discover this was a genre that had been firmly established, and I, in fact, hadn't invented anything new. I had taken my Star Wars toys and come up with a D6 system to work out which Stormtrooper or which Ewok should win the battle.
Wow. And somebody was like watching in the window, and Wegg Games did the original. Remember the D6 system for the original Star Wars RPG?
Yeah.
How long ago were we talking? Can we date that, you?
That must have been about 30 years ago.
Really?
So I don't get to be the first generation. I was there with Gygax. You know, you still meet them on the internet, but, you know, early second generation, or maybe if you let me, tail end of the first generation.
Yeah, no, that's where I'm at, man. But hey, starting off with like a creation, you made something. You know, you didn't find something and become obsessed with it like yours truly. You decided to do your own thing, and no, that is cool. So after that, or maybe, you know, that instance of discovering that RPGs were a thing, although, you know, hidden and kind of closeted back in the day, was there a defining moment there, or maybe later, or perhaps a gateway drug like video games, cosplay, card games, movie, TV, sci-fi, or whatever, that continued you on in the RPG world? Or did you just kind of like disregard that first defeat and move forward?
I think the nitro moment, you know, when the eject button got hit on the petrol tank and the car shot off, was when I went from that homebrew system to being invited to play in a you know, a gaming group at school. And that was a very old role-playing game called Dragon Warriors, which is still around today. It's a sort of six-book format published in the same novel size. We're not talking about the, you know, the player's handbook hardback here. We're talking a book that could hide in a library without any notice. And I played that with friends at schools for a couple of years. And then, this might be familiar to some listeners, you end up as the games master, running the after school club. And that's, it's been part of my life ever since.
Right on. So how long have you been a gamer, you know, been playing these RPGs?
So yeah, that's got to be about 3 decades, 30 plus years. And, you know, like many people, it ebbs and flows. It's never completely gone away, not even during the lockdown. So I probably played the most during early university, when, you know, your first year at college, the people you meet first are the people at the gaming group. And then your reason to go and socialize is to go out in the student union and have dice and beer. So that was gaming almost every other night. And then it calms down dramatically as you step into your first job.
Yeah.
At least it did for me. But then once you get, you know, you get, or any new job, that's raw for you, I suppose. But once you, you know, you get stable again and you feel as if you can turn time back to social, my gaming does the same and it ramps back up. But, you know, I've never been without gaming in my life during this entire time. There's always been at least a game once a week or once a fortnight at the worst. So, yeah, it's been a constant companion through thick and thin.
Right on. So this is a later question, but we touched on it. You touched on it right at the gate. What made you decide to start making content? What made you decide to go from, you know, the Ewok battle versus, you know, in your basement and developing a game that was fun for you or that you could share to actually online content creation, such as your blog? Or was there something before that?
I think control freakery, probably, at least to begin with. So we were playing Warhammer at school. Then I came up with this totally original game called Morningstar, which isn't as original as you can imagine. And that was just mucking around, and it was awful. But it was mine. and therefore we weren't changing the rules of an official game. We were creating the rules to suit Morningstar and suited our style of play. But skip forward many years to the internet, and I created a website called Game Weird. And that was really me learning to code. PHP, database in the background. It was a sandbox for me to play in. And of course, I made it about role-playing games. And that site persisted for a while until like this became too cumbersome to maintain. If you code everything by hand, you create a technical legacy that will consume every waking moment of your life. And about the third time I fought off a hacking temp, I just realized, look, I'm way out of my depth here. I did not go into programming, although that was a possibility. And so I did, as many people do, and I migrated to WordPress. And I changed the blog from Game Weird to Geek Native. And that must have been about 10 years ago. And that was the right decision, because it's less time faffing around with upgrades and PHP commands, and more time keeping track of what's happening in the industry and what's exciting people, what's exciting me, and then trying to write it up. I mean, it's not quite a hot take. I think I live somewhere between opinion and news. So I'm not doing that control freakery again. I'm now doing the joy you get from sharing cool stuff that you find. If you recommend a comic or a game, and you go running up to a friend and say, I found this and I thought of you. That's what keeps me going right now. The sharing the cool stuff.
Right on. So do you have a go-to RPG now that's your favorite system to play, or when you were within that system? Like, you talked about playing in college, and with jobs and life, it slows right down. Are you currently active in a game? Do you have a favorite class, race, alignment, something that's a go-to stick for you?
So my staple for the last 12 years is a homebrew. I guess it's very loosely based off Fudge, but the dice come out once a month. I can see some sort of crunch players cringing in horror. That's not role playing. You hardly ever roll the dice, but it's just what suits us, and it works very well during the lockdown when we've moved to Discord. But once a month or more often, at least once a month, I get withdrawal symptoms. If I don't, I will go to a gaming club and I will play in a game and I will use the system. And my current favorite, and this will last until the next favorite, is the Cypher system, which I think is underrated. Monte Cook Cypher system. It's, I think, a nice mix between mechanics and description. I think it particularly suits investigations and exploration. I mean, it can be deadly in combat, but it's not about... And so you can make mistakes, but the game itself, I think, encourages good role-playing. And by good role-playing, I don't mean funny voices and quirky characters. I mean the players doing actions in the game that encourage other players to join in and latch their characters onto and help the game's master see how the plot can develop and help the game's master see what the players want to do next, which I just think makes for a much better game. And Cypher has the crown currently.
Right on. So I take it you're saying something like, it's almost like the players go into heist mode. They would discuss a plan, everyone's involved, they'd activate it, and the DM, as for once, gets to react to their actions. You're saying that the Cypher system maybe feeds into that?
Yes, it definitely does. So, I mean, character generation is you describe your character with words, just a sentence, but it immediately gives everybody else a flavor for, what that character is likely to do and how they're going to do it. And then the Cypher system, if you don't know that well, I think the key thing to know from this point is you can spend your effort to automatically succeed. So if a task is important to you, chances are your character can get it done. But of course, you can't blitz your way through every scene doing that, because you'll run out of effort.
Is that the one that came out recently with Cook's New World with the card based? Or am I thinking of something else?
I think most things Monte Cook have done recently has been Cypher based. I'm not sure I know the one you mean, but if I was a gambling man, I would say it probably was Cypher.
I am shaming myself because I am a big Cook fan. I liked all of his stuff that he did back in the day for everyone else, and then went off on his own, and nothing but respect for the man. Do you know him? Can we get him on the show? Your blog or my show? No. I saw a bunch of stuff he was releasing to Roll20.net, and then I tracked it back to his website and his new world and all the stuff going on. There was something on the fringe about a card system. And I, get busy, but never got back to it. And when you hit on that, I just thought that was a thing. But no, Monte Cook has a lot to show for his career, and he's pushing the envelope in a different direction from where everybody else is going. Something, any geek worth of salt should at least look at. you know, don't get bogged down in one system. Can you tell me possibly about where does the magic happen? Like when you're blogging, when you're like the process, is it in the room we're seeing now? Are you on the road with your phone taking notes? Kind of like, oh, this would be a great idea, blah, 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 type of thing. Where's the magic happen? You know, like that kind of thing.
Oh, it happens here.
Yeah.
I mean, if it wasn't lockdown, in Scotland is still in degree of lockdown, I would spend more time at work than I would at home, like most people. Hmm. But I get to work with half an eye on the internet. And so at work, I might if the magic is that moment of inspiration, if the magic is, oh, I read that and that's so cool, I want to write that up and think through the implications of that, then some of that would happen at work. But most of the production, you know, the boring part, the typing on the keyboard, the correcting as many typos as you've caught to try and reduce your embarrassment after you hit publish and then the internet starts putting out all your spelling errors, that happens here. So we have to thank people like Feedly, which is my RSS delivery choice. Most blogs have a syndication form through RSS. Mm-hmm. So I live in my email clan, and I live in Feedly, and I live in Twitter, just trying to keep a tab on what is exciting role players right now.
What's going on? And
yeah.
Any chance you've been talking about recently? Now, it's a year old, but we were very first to hit the mark. We jumped on advanced, the Pathfinder 2nd edition.
Oh, yes.
So you're a year in, and this is usually where the bitching starts. This is where usually people make decisions going, I finally got to try it, or we've been playing it, and they've leveled through some stuff, and they're really deciding, are we keeping with this? Are we going back to 5e? Are we going back to 1st edition Pathfinder? Is any of that circling in your world right now? Just curious.
Off the top of my head, I think the Pathfinder metrics from Roll20 and Fantasy Grounds, and when ICV2 do their What's Selling in America reports, Pathfinder's doing pretty well. It's top five. I have to caveat that. Not all of that is Pathfinder 2. Much of that is still Pathfinder 1. A year seems like a long time for most consumers, but you know, many role-playing games, campaigns run for years and years and years, and so the opportunity to go from Pathfinder 1 to 2 isn't commonplace. So I think Pathfinder 2 is still pretty young. And of course, the other caveat to that is top five, it doesn't mean anything. You're Dungeons and Dragons, or you're a small thing. So I cannot speak as to whether Pathfinder 2 is big enough for Pazio. But, you know, they've got that computer game.
They've got Kingmaker.
That's right. It's nothing like a live show to make your mind go blank, I'm discovering.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but that Baldur's Gate 3 is coming out, which is, you know, Forgotten Realms D&D belt. It is probably going to tromp the crap out of it.
Yes. And I think my prediction is Pathfinder 2 might get a bit of a boom when D&D 5 begins to get a little bit long in the tooth for the new generation. I think D&D 5, I think Tasha's Cauldron of Everything might be quite a significant upgrade, because it's going to roll out things like, you know, alternative suggestions on how you can handle races, like don't call them races and take out the racial modifiers. That might put some people off. Last time D&D put people off, they went en masse to Pathfinder. But of course, Pathfinder 2 has already made that jump. So our prediction is, There's a non-trivial percentage of gamers out there who were introduced to the hobby of our D&D 5, and for various reasons will start to look around for something new. But if history repeats itself, not too new. Big chunk of them will land on Pathfinder.
So you said you try very hard for your blog to keep your finger on the pulse, as it were. I've already heard whispers from someone on my cast about 6th edition D&D, like the clock has wound that many years, and it's time that they started talking about it. Have you heard anything? I haven't seen anything myself, but
I hear the speculation.
Yeah.
Because you're right. D&D 5 for a D&D edition is quite long in the tooth now. Not compared to the early ones, but if you just get Wikipedia and the publication date of 3 onwards, yeah, it's about overdue. The reason why I think D&D 6e will be a bit further away isn't just Tasha's, but because computer games. Hasbro went to Toy Fair in London this year, and they said, the future of Dungeons & Dragons is digital. A very wealthy venture capitalist firm, Andrian Howitson, this month, wrote up a report saying the future of tabletop gaming is digital. And these are the people who backed Facebook and Tesla and Google. Big bucks.
Yeah.
Hasbro themselves have bought computer game companies. There are numerous D&D 5e computer games, not just Baldur's Gate, in the works. I think Hasbro would think twice before undermining the attraction of these D&D 5e computer games by making 5e not the latest D&D by producing D&D 6e. So I do not think strategically you will see a D&D 6 until the D&D 5e computer games are a bit stale.
Hmm.
And I think that's a few years away at the very least.
Now, something that's breaking right now, people think, because we use Fantasy Grounds right now, and it's a flat-looking thing, and it's almost like, oh, you play your RPG, like Kingmaker was an adventure path, six people around the table, now it's online. There's something I've seen that's out where you get a white pad, and you place it in front of you, and you don't have to have people in the same room. This can go over lines, so bear in mind. Yeah. Picture a white pad in front of you. You put on these glasses, and you put tokens down, and the tokens project three-dimensional minis. And the pad is set up for depth, so the pad can suddenly look like a Grand Canyon going down in, or pop up and look like, in your glasses view, strictly in your glasses view, look like Cass and Ravenloft, and you could play online with this and have everyone with their three-dimensional miniature board in front of them that looks possibly more epic than a train set or a Warhammer setup, which is all 3D modeling. And because they can connect online because of COVID, you know, people are isolated, that type of thing. Like, just to clarify, when you say like Hasbro brought a digital, I'm wondering if anyone's buying into that, where you get that stay-at-home table feel of moving pieces in front of you, as opposed to just like everyone else jumping in front of your computer, click, click with the mouse, you know, that kind of thing, because of this revolutionary technology. I just can't remember the name of it.
I don't know that one you're talking about, but I can absolutely confirm those type of technologies in development. So there's a Game Board One was on Kickstarter last year, and that is like a painting size slab. You put it down on your table, and it becomes your game board. And you can put a second game board next to it to expand your virtual tabletop. Mm. The attraction there is Netflix of games, where you have a subscription, and then, you know, the tabletop can show whatever board game you want, or track your characters and know the rules, whether it's D&D or Pathfinder. That's cool. Andrean Howinson mentioned that in their future of tabletop gaming is digital. And, you know, if Andrean Howinson are writing about this, you infer that they are, or at least considered investing in it.
Right.
And so they had something in mind. So I probably, you know, Hasbro doesn't need investments. You have people buy their shares. At Virtually Expo, there was another from a Spanish company, demo very similar to the way you've described. And of course, today, Facebook's virtual reality second generation headsets leaked prematurely when Facebook put it up early. So on the 16th, Facebook Connect, we will hear about Facebook's plan for virtual reality. Although I'm aware of what you described as augmented reality, more like Microsoft HoloLens than Facebook's virtual reality. But in those leaked videos, we can see that there were more than just computer games in the Facebook library of virtual interaction. The Netflix logo, for example, is easy to spot. So you could, and you don't need a computer to use this new Facebook technology. You can run it off your phone. So you could quite easily imagine a virtual reality, virtual tabletop.
And with outdoors not being an option so much and gatherings being prohibited, this is going to push that field. People are going to shift their focus and companies to buy and produce this product far faster than we would have normally encountered, I would believe. But back to grilling you.
Okay.
How long has your blog been up and running? How long have you been creating content? And is it your first piece? Was there anything before? Like you said, you were talking about Geek Native was what you settled on. How long have you been doing this?
Good question. I'm going to have to guess. I think it's about 20 years. So that Teach Myself PHP site, Game Weird, must have been about 20 years ago, because I went to university for a second time, so I must have been around about 20. I did a sandwich course, which if you're not familiar with, you do academia for 2 years, you then go work in real life, write up what that was like, you know, in conjunction with your employee, and that becomes graded, and then you go back to university for a final year. And in that sandwich year where I had, you know, money, I was getting paid to do this, I spent it on setting up a website. So that was about 20 years ago. And yeah, Game Weird ran for a good few years. So I think Geek Native is at least 10 years old, probably more like 20. Sorry, probably more like 12 to 15. It's I've got friends who have kids younger than my website. You know, and I think I'm not particularly good at it, but if I have a stat, maybe it's constitution, because I just kept going. And, you know, the content doesn't get deleted. And even if Google sends one person to an article I wrote in, you know, 2010 and another person to an article I wrote in 2011, yes, that's two people on the blog. So each post I write all adds up. So, yeah.
It becomes cumulative, yeah. Now, I'm going to ask you a question that you can come back to, if you wish, in case something, our back and forth, pops a memory in your head. Hence the name of the show, Attack of Opportunity. I'd like to think I'm not interrupting the guest, but if they tell me something or have an answer, it usually sparks some kind of, oh, I remember this back in the day, and, you know, on and on it goes. Happy accidents that might have become a staple in your show. Is there something that got memed? Is there an interview you've done or something that happened quite by accident where you managed just to be luck out, grab a hold of it and use it as content? To give you an example, like yourself, we had booked you weeks in advance. I said, please, I need to get back to you. I have a bunch of guests. I had a guest fall out today at the last minute. I just reached out on the net and grabbed you and thank you so much for doing this with horribly short notice, ladies and gentlemen. So, you know, thank you. Mr. Goodwood, this had happened once in the past, twice, okay, a lot, but you know, people have lives. I had reached out to Facebook, to a site, it eludes me. It's one of the sites where the DMs, you know, congregate. They put up advice and they talk about the gaming, but you know, no spamming kind of thing. One of these great sites to go on. And I went fishing in there for a guest going, hey, everybody, you know, someone was talking about this and a DM was talking about that. I noticed this in your feed. Would anyone like to be a guest, you know, like just an offhanded GM, anybody, you know, we'll wing it. Right. And a gentleman by the name of David said, I'll do it. I said, great. Thank you, sir. Get David in the room, pop up the Santa beard. And it's like, oh my God, it's David Fryant from Nerdarchy. Hello, sir. how are you? You know, not to drop names, but it was someone, that had experienced the social media and commercial as well as the sort of spotlight side of D&D that I've been just getting into in the last 3-4 years. You know, the dude's way above my pay grade, as it were. So I just didn't know what to do with him. I just stumbled through a bunch of questions. He was really great. And by the end, I was giving him shit that his laundry machine AC was on in the background, ruining my audio. And it was such a happy accident. And it's one of my favorite interviews because it was random. It was like, oh, I got this great big name. That was not what was important to me. Sure, I'm thrilled that he's a recognizable person. But I got my hands on him quite by accident. So I'll leave this in your head for now, unless you've got...
Well, yeah, it's interesting because I think pretty much everything I do, I'm shooting for that happy accident. So Geek Native can break news. But when that happens... the stars aligned and I managed to roll a natural 20 because I can't force it to happen. And so if I do, so that right now there's lots of rumors about HeroQuest because, you know, the Avalon Hell domain owned by Hasbro has a HeroQuest timer. And as it happened, I managed to get to that story early. So that was a luck. And as it happened, I'd written up rumors about it because of paperwork filed by another game. So that was, you know, happy incidences. But the one that springs to mind is you telling me your story. And I was racking my brain. The oddest, most random, you couldn't see that coming, was when I accepted, people pitch content ideas to you over the internet quite a lot if you're running a blog, for marketing, for the SEO, the value of the links. And I turned 99 out of 100 of them down. But one of them, about 10 years ago, had an interesting puzzle. And apparently, if you could solve the puzzle, you get a job offer. So I thought, yeah, why not? I'll post that. And I did. And I spent half an hour trying to crack the puzzle myself before realizing, wow, this is really hard. Well, I will just write what the progress I've made and where I think I've gone wrong. I'll post that with the puzzle, and I did. And then nothing happened. I mean, many of the articles I publish will get read a dozen times, and then they'll fade into the archives, as this one did. 2 months later, thereabouts, I woke up to the news that MI5 had been secretly recruiting cryptography agents, and they'd seeded the internet with puzzles. You can see where this is going. I had posted the MI5 puzzle, and I had posted the keywords I mentioned and how to crack it weren't right, but I had, at the time that news was breaking, I had the most complete answer. So I my web post crashed with all the traffic. It was national news, this puzzle. I quickly tried to tweak it as much as I can. And, everybody from... I don't know, people with Russian accents phoning me up to people mooning that I'd misled them. It was just, you know, an absolute chaotic day. But that was an eye-opener to show you just...
That's good.
When you get a thing, do the best you can with that thing, and it might reward you later, if not immediately.
That's good. I'm giggling in today's day and age, you know, like talking about ye olden times and stuff and tensions between countries and things, you know, is not... not a good thing to discuss, but in all humor, I think you can get away with this. For starters, my mother's British, so I'm half British. My father is half Scottish. So I don't want anyone call me out going, well, you can't say stuff like that because you're not. Well, guess what? I am. Even though I am 100% Canadian, born here in Canada, the relatives very quickly turn into Brits and Scots. I thought it was funny that you, being Scottish yourself, got halfway through a British MI5 code, put it on the net, went, there you go. You know, the rest of you sorted out. Like, to me, that's freaking hilarious. It's almost like you're kicking Longshanks in the teeth going, well, you know, we're not going to do it at your work for you, but this is how easy it is to get this far. Like, I just find that personally freaking hilarious. I don't know, maybe just because I'm a big James Bond fan, but... I mean no insult to this to any of our three countries, but I just thought it was delightful. I'm just curious if you just had a little bit extra pride that it was MI5 and not like the CIA. Or here's one. Do you know the Canadian Secret Service?
No, I don't. No.
That's because we're good at it.
I was going
to
say.
We don't rent out our name to Hollywood. It's called CSIS.
All right.
And our official CIA or MI5 or MSC type of thing is called CSIS. And a lot of people don't know it exists. It's like, well, it's because we don't splash it all around Hollywood. Thank you. We're actually good at keeping secrets. We just hide behind the Americans going, oh, look at these very loud.
Yes.
A lot of people jumping up and down. You know, we'll get our work done.
I see the strategy. Yeah.
Yeah. No,
you know what? Batman joke. Came to mind. So you are the clad in black hiding in the shadows while a loud thing with a yellow vest is jumping around being an obvious target in front of you.
Possibly. Yeah. I'm thinking just about every country has to have a decent one. Now, there's the spy world of the old world, right? And we're not talking America, Canada. We were colonies. I'm talking the old... You ever watch the old Elizabethan stuff and they've got... the British and a Germanic nation of Europe, as well as the French and the Spanish all going at it. And not just talking about like the endless Rose Wars and all that type of stuff. I'm talking about like the actual Secret Service, the political maneuvers and everything. I found all that very fascinating. And so sorry if I am offending while I kid. Anyway, but getting back to roasting my guest. I'm wondering, you talked about the online, so where can we find you? What labels here? Like, you know.
My main presence is geeknative.com.
Okay.
But I have a Twitter account, geeknative. I have a Facebook account, geeknative. Weirdly, the geeknative Pinterest account, which is geeknative, is pretty big. What I tend to do is, with Pinterest, when I share images from the blog post, I share them by theme. So I don't have a board that says Pathfinder. And a board that says Dungeons and Dragons. I just have a board that says fantasy or sci-fi. So one of the goals for Geek Native was to bring people into this hobby by showing people geeks out there who might have an interest in sci-fi fantasy that, you know, tabletop gamers do more than talk about their level 13 paladin. And I liked Pinterest for that reason, because you could share that cool evocative art and get a click, and then somebody might come through from the Pinterest as an image sharing site and discover it's attached to a game. And not only does that night look cool, but you could play that night. And so I was an early adopter in Pinterest. There are some obscure places that you can find me. There's a Geek Native TikTok account that has a few experimental posts. So what I've done with that, and I don't know if this is a success or not, I have a video format with a headline and an image. And, you know, it lasts for 6 seconds and it joins a TikTok stream. Dungeons and Dragons has a very large... very wholesome community of not just young people, there's some old vets in there as well, and it's lovely. So I hope the Americans get to keep TikTok, because it has its faults and its sins, but the D&D community in TikTok is lovely. I also have a Telegram channel, which is pretty obscure, but Telegram is fairly big in Europe, especially the closer to Russia you go. And the Geek Native Telegram, when it's working correctly, just when I share an article, you get an image and the headline from the article and an easy click back. So if you are a Telegram user, it's just easy to subscribe to Geeknative Headlines. I would encourage you to mute the channel so you don't get an update if I have insomnia at 3 o'clock in the morning and write a post, but you can then review it at your leisure. And then you can even subscribe to Geeknative on Google News. You have to search for Geeknative and you'll find us as a source. The site isn't big enough to inject itself into the headlines in Google News, but we are there. And then, and lastly, and the thing that I'm doing the worst is I try and do a 10-minute podcast summary of the news, but you know I can admit it. Podcast is not my medium, But I like the idea of, I think the relationship you have with people when you talk to them is very different than the relationship you get from sitting behind the WordPress admin field and publishing some text. So there are listeners, and I hope those 10-minute weekly summaries of what's happened in the headlines the week before are of some value.
Cool. The genuine personality of yourself, does it go in the writing, or do you have sort of an alternate persona that you decide, well, this person's writing the blog and Geek Native is your super suit? You know what I'm saying? Like, is there a separate, like, have you decided to be an alt self in, for example, like as a running joke, right? My cast say, like, well, you're not really a good dungeon master or game master. You're more like a game show host kind of thing. Right. Oh, and I don't disagree, but, I take myself and I riv it up a bit. You know, I'm actually larger than life person in real life. This is true. But walking down the street or glad handing someone in person isn't quite as dynamic and is that right? That's something you would do in front of a camera. So my persona, the GM Jeff Ball persona, is myself rather inflated, let's say. And I'm curious, do you do that in your writing? Would you print stuff, or would you like the blog of Geek Native? When you're speaking as Geek Native, like, is that someone else? You know what I'm saying? Like,
so I think I do the opposite from you. That's definitely me, but I tone it down. So I want it to be me because what's the point of doing it otherwise? So I'm not saying I do hot takes.
Yeah, yeah.
If I'm covering a news article, I'm trying to replay the news back to you as factually and as accurately as I can. In fact, this year I introduced a corrections page on the site to just log the occasional times where I have to do it. It's not, if I make a big error, log it so it's transparent and the update is there. Or if I get new information, it's there. But I also want to add some value. And I think one possible definition of value is, here's somebody who's been tracking the scene for the last 10, 20 years. What do they think about this? So, like in that HeroQuest story, not just saying, here's a HeroQuest subdomain that Avalon Hill has popped up, but pointing out, do you know what? Wizards of the Coast just lost control of the Avalon Hill brand just last week in the Hasbro reshuffle. And a month before that, Restoration Games filed paperwork for our HeroQuest title. So you get a little bit of my evaluation in that, and therefore with that you get a little bit of my personality. But I absolutely tone the politics down as far as I can stomach, and I tone the sass and the sarcasm down as far as I can get that lever to go, but I can't quite get it off to zero.
No, that's interesting. Like I said, I try to stay away from opinions, but I have this sort of personal creed of comedy for comedy's sake. So if I'm leaning into a joke or someone's making fun, I just play up to it. It doesn't mean that's my personal opinion on something. I mean, we try to stay away from being offensive, but saying we actually, open the sluice gate where you're dialing it back. And I respect that because in writing, people will take you far more seriously than somebody just kind of blah, 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 jazz hands, the way we roll, that kind of thing. It's in print. And even though you can say something and you're stuck up there being exposed forever on the internet, in print still has a respectable, people expect it just to be true, like you have that responsibility. I get it. You got to tone it down. But I got to say, like, you in person, not what I expected.
No,
but a happy surprise. You're talking about things you've seen. You're talking about obviously some your thoughts about things and what you're excited about is coming through about what you're mentioning in the interview, that kind of thing. No. Happily surprised. Do you have any merchandise? Like, I saw your logo, which I actually like. Do you have merchandise? T-shirts, that kind of thing going on. Like, any merchandise out there for fans? And where can we find it?
That's a good question. I should have plugged that when I was listing all the places you can find Geek Native. I have a Redbubble store. So, okay. Google Redbubble Geek Native, or if you're on the blog, it's the shop link. And I need to do a blog post about all the publishers out there who have a Redbubble store or equivalent, because I think it's a no-brainer. The amount of money role-playing publishers spend in art must be formidable. Absolutely formidable. And yeah, it makes the books much better. But what if you can turn that art, and I hope you pay the artist as much as you can afford. What if you can turn that into sort of an evergreen trickle of income? Does that goblin look cool on a t-shirt? Or if it's a Mighty Vista, Redbubble, you can get it turned into a jigsaw these days. Use that art as often as you can. So I think everybody should have a Redbubble store or equivalent. I'm not, you know, sponsored by Redbubble. Others exist.
don't feel bad. You like Redbubble, use it. I have a lot of people going, are you sponsored? Because you keep going on about this microphone. I keep going on. No, it's like, in my experience, I'm really jazzed about my... Here's an example. Okay. I think the first time my cast called me on this is I got a dice tower. Oh, yeah. And they were, oh my God, $50, but I want this thing. It's a Gazelle. Ooh, this, you know, my wife's like, no. So I, for like $10, $5, this sort of press wood put together, you know, but it's like, not that it's cheap. It actually is sturdy. It's made by, you know, Warworld. That gets the job done. And I've been using it for a couple seasons now. So I was on about it. Hey, guys, look at this. I love this thing, you know, type of thing. I'm not sponsored by them. You're just, you believe in a product and you really like it. You've tested it. Why not mention it? You know, you're not trying to sell it for the audience to buy for them. You're like, hey, world, or hey, friends, you know, I like this. Check it out. That's it. You know?
And it's actually a really relevant topic to gamers right now. So if you visit Geek Native, the first time you visit, you'll get a big banner across the top of the site that says, you know, please use your browser to accept cookies. And I'm aware that is the spirit of the law, but not the letter of the European law. European law insists that my website manages your cookies, but I can't figure out how to do that. And we won't get any more technical than that. But that banner also says Geek Native uses affiliate links. And every article I write, you'll have a reminder at the top of that page that there might be affiliate links in this post. And I have to use the word might because I use technology to say, well, somebody has clicked on that link. I'm going to have the technology looks to see whether I can get a commission off it. And if I can, that technology kicks in. And of course, it depends if you're in the UK. We don't have the same bookstores as you do in Canada or the US. So I have no control over that. But I want to disclose that I might be getting commission. And then the same is important. We've seen some YouTubers from the world of computer games quite shamelessly promote things without disclosing that they have a relationship there. And I can't think of much worse thing to do to your audience than to, you know, mix up editorial with advertorial, if you want to use that phrase.
Yeah, yeah, no, I follow you.
Do you know what? And it's hard to make money off gamers because we're really savvy and sophisticated and a bit cynical. We don't rush out and buy the new thing straight away. And those affiliate links I have don't get clicked a lot. But that's fine. But what gamers are really good at doing is spotting those adverts that are not appropriately disclosed. You cannot run a blog like Geek Native and think you can pull the wool over your audience's eyes. No way. Gamers are too smart for that. We solve puzzles for a hobby.
Yeah,
not at the MI5 level, as it turns out. But we solve puzzles as a hobby. They will notice. And there are maybe, I won't name them, there's maybe a handful of sinners in the role-playing blog world who do this and who think they're getting away with it. But I'm really pleased to say that 99.9% of us don't do that. We're super ethical. And that's just maybe a take on the hobby that people don't have very often. Just how wholesome, I'm using the word wholesome a lot today, just how wholesome the blogging community is.
The truth will out, I believe, is the phrase across the pond.
Yeah.
So let's talk about your latest project. Have you got anything in the works right now that you're very excited about or that's just on the horizon that maybe a sneak peek or anything you can talk to us about for yourself, for your blog, a change, a new one?
I've come to the conclusion that I should probably do a table of all the virtual tabletops out there because they keep on popping up. And not in a non-trivial way, in a really impressive way. So there's like newbies like Foundry, which I think has got some traction, where you buy it once and it's yours. None of the subscription model. But on the other side, you've got to provide the hosting infrastructure yourself. There's Taresk, which is designed to be done without your keyboard or mouse. So maybe it's that big screen we're talking about when you've just got your hand movement.
Yeah, yeah.
And Battle Map. It was spelled with two P's, which is all about that close scene. And what Battle Map did recently is they procedurally generated a whole host of battle maps. And I'm not saying they're as good as the hand-drawn cartography that you can sponsor on Patreon or buy. Mm-hmm. But if you needed, a playing field collection of battle maps, you know, a whole empire turned into a hex crawl, that's the way to do it, because it was pretty good. So I think maybe a summary of those contenders. But if I do that, I feel the urge, the responsibility to at least keep it as up to date as I can. And that might be a bit of a task. I use my Patreon, which is very small but exists, to ask people what I should do. So I've made a couple of random generators, and things like the prophecy generator was a sleeper hit. People like the prophecies that that spits out. And my patrons have asked that I do a background generator for NPCs. So what I've done is plan it out very long term. So I've done a secret society generator because I think some of the NPCs in the NPC generator will belong to a secret society. And I've done a tavern generator because I think some of the NPCs in the NPC generator will be working for or will have worked for a tavern. And I think I will get to my... And this NPC generator, you know, for these minor NPCs, that as a GM, you've not thought up. But, you know, you've picked the characters up with a handy passing traveler on his wagon, and they're, you know, the PCs are lying in the back tending the wounds, and somebody, probably the bard, strikes up a conversation with this ad hoc NPC, and all of a sudden he needs his background, his life story. That's the characters I'm targeting for in this NPC generator. So I think I will do a whole string of little generators to get us to the point where I can randomly generate an NPC or 12 for you on a click of a button. I anticipate that'll take about 5 to 20 years.
Have you heard of the SOG experience?
Yes, but I've not followed that up.
They reached out to me via email, and I'm hoping to interview them soon, and they're going to start a Kickstarter, but I was impressed with what they had to say in the email. It was concise. It was, this is what we're doing. Be aware. You know, it wasn't very spammy, and they had a link, and it's like, if you're interested, come to our Discord. So I went to their Discord, and I read, and they basically blogged it out. This is what we're about. And I read through it going, this sounds really, really good. It's taking something like Roll20 Fantasy Grounds and just adding some stuff as if they were listening to all the players bitching and GMs blame, going, I wish it did this. I wish our current did this, mm-hmm. That type of thing. Now, it's no secret that several of my shows are sponsored recently by Fantasy Grounds, and we are using that platform. But it's not like we're having an inclusive deal. A sponsor could be something as simple as they said, hey, here's a couple books on our format since you've bought everything else. And, you know, there you go. You know, people think sponsorship like, oh, he's rolling in money. No, they just kind of gave you free shit that's no cost to them, especially if it's virtual, digital. Yeah. And you know, we're like, yeah, go sponsor. Thank you. You know, you saved us money, right? Yeah. Something I've been learning quickly. People, sponsor does not mean like you're an athlete on a Wheaties box. No,
sadly not. No.
No, it does not. But what made me think of it was not just to plug Saga because they reached out to me, but you were just talking about all these other platforms that people should, you know, shop around. Sure, the people kind of go like a top 10, and you can really chip yourself out of a hidden gem if you ask the internet what the internet thinks of the top 10 platforms. Sure, they might be the longest, the most money behind it, or the most Google space that they've engulfed, and that gets them to the top of the list. Does not mean it's the best. Does not mean it's the best for you. A perfectly good example is Sirenscape is a musical.
Yep.
And right, I haven't touched it. I'm a strictly tabletop audio guy. And not just because he was my guest, because I got used to it. I love it. I love it, how the guy rolls. And then Arcane Anthems, another one came along. And yeah, I interviewed that guy. Like I said, it's not because I can't get my hands on this guy for an interview. I played around with the demo, and I found it cumbersome. Mm. And I just found the way some of these other guys like Tabletop Audio, Arcane Anthems, and a bunch more do theirs and are trying. They're the underdog now. They're trying so hard to just be noticed, going, hey, we're here. Yeah. And some of these guys got to be free and rely on their patrons. And it's like, why pay for a subscription to feed the machine when my preference is here and I can help this guy, you know what I mean? So without even being asked, not that they're a sponsor because they don't have money to give, I use these guys and I'm like, I love using this stuff. Yeah. You know, hopefully someone notices. And like yourself, there's just other things out there that maybe aren't as big, maybe aren't as good, but that does not mean they're not worth your time, and you could find them being your personal preference. So we're talking about your blog. We're talking about the fantasy world. An off-topic question. You do not have to answer these, sir.
Okay.
Okay. What do you do for a living? Because I find it fascinating, the mold, to break the mold. Not all geeks are IT techs. I've talked to lawyers, ditch diggers, doctors, you name it. There's a lot of surprising people now in the geeky world and what they do to put food on the table until they can, you know, their geeky obsession, you know, can pay for things. A lot of us are not there yet.
I'm not sure how much I break the mold. I work for, so would you call it a marketing agency? Yeah. I mean, I began purely geek websites on the internet. What do you need to do to make Google like that website? But that became important to businesses. And so we got bought by marketing firms. And then I left because I don't want to work for a giant marketing firm. But the skills that I have were similar. So I found an agency where I live locally with really fantastic talent working with people I respect. So yes, I suppose I do marketing, and we have part of the agency that does advertising as well. But you know, we are big enough that we don't have to work with sleazeballs. In fact, we've fired clients, we've declined business because we just thought, yuck. And we get to work with a lot of charities and a lot of health. So, you know, small plug, Scotland this week, last week, Monday, isn't it, launched our COVID track and protect app. So it's completely anonymous. You just need to turn your Bluetooth on, and you need to have a relatively up-to-date iOS or Android because it uses the Apple Google framework. Turn your Bluetooth on, it emits a completely randomized secure code that other phones using the app can pick up. And the only thing it logs is it doesn't even know your location. It just knows you are in proximity to another phone transmitting these codes. And if you then, unfortunate enough to get a COVID diagnosis, you get a unique code to put into your phone. And then people that you've been in contact with for you were within 2 meters for 15 minutes or more, they will get an alert on their phone to say you've been potentially exposed to somebody with COVID.
Yeah.
And, you know, to work on a project like that, it is hopefully a once in a lifetime opportunity. But, you know, we were pulling all-nighters, weekends, and it was totally worth it. Just the buzz. So I've talked about the buzz of sharing a cool role-playing tool that I discovered on. But, you know, the buzz of doing, you know, a big charity project or something like that, it's hard to beat. So I work in marketing, but I still manage to make myself feel good anyway.
No, that's a good answer, because like you said, I'm stereotypically in this, but then you talked about what you did with it, which, you know, is something. My brother has 5 computers working on folding proteins, and I've got one dedicated to help him out to try to, and you can pick your disease, and we pick COVID, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah. But what you're doing, sir, that sounds epic. That sounds groundbreaking. We've been talking to Andrew Girdwood, the mastermind behind Geek Native, and I feel I've barely scratched the surface, so we got to have you back on the show. You know, we'll do the 6 months of a year follow-up type of thing. Thank you so much for being on the show, sir.
You're welcome.
We will see you next time.
Okay, cheers. Thanks very much.
On Attack of Opportunity.